Heterodorks. Heterodox dorks.
Hello, TERFs and trannies. This is part two of our episode with Brianna Wu. If you have not listened to part one, please download that and give it a listen.
All right. Hey, I wanted to ask. So yes. Since we've been just discussing calm things up to this point, let me bring up something slightly contentious, because I did want to ask you this with this opportunity.
Wait, J.K. Rowling is not contentious?
Not to me.
I like a little contention. I don't like provoking people. Yeah. I don't like it for the, how can I say it? I don't like
the lulls,
hard feelings or anything like that, but I like challenging conversations, right? Like, I like to hear a different point of view expressed with some respect, and I kind of need that. So yeah. What were you going to say, Karina?
Well, I was going to give maybe just a little bit of context. Part of the origin story of this podcast is that Nina and I started to have dinners together during the pandemic, and we thought it would be, I suggested it because I'm a covert narcissist. I don't know. I thought our conversations were so interesting that I thought other people would find them funny and interesting and engaging. Mm-hmm. And we were both listeners of a podcast called Blocked and Reported.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know Blocked and Reported?
I've never listened to it, but I'm aware of it.
Well, one of its hosts is a reporter named Jesse Singel.
God, I'm aware.
And there was I don't think it was a bit. What would you call it? Something involving you.
Regarding a
claim that you had some documentation that Jesse Singel was requesting that trans women like engage with him, I don't know, sexually or
I didn't say sexually
or provocatively or something. Well, this is what I'm asking. I don't remember the whole claim. Mm-hmm. Here. Can you give us like your side of that?
So here's the side of it.
Yeah,
and I've never said this before. Jesse Singel has personally tried to get me fired from my job with Jen Kuker. I can produce the emails on this. I've worked with Jesse a lot, actually. I was one of his main contacts during Gamergate. I've talked to him on the phone many times.
I've talked to him too.
Let me finish.
Yeah, yeah.
I have my own impression of his skill as a reporter, as someone who's worked with hundreds of reporters over my career. And it's not good, to be honest with you. You know, I have some extreme concerns about the way that he assessed that Atlanta the Atlantic article on trans children. I think he's a sloppy person. I think he takes a lot of shortcuts, and I think he chooses sources that align with the story he wants to tell. So, you know, at some point, the way Jesse handles sourcing is going to be a major scandal for him. I don't know when it's going to be, but if someone ends up wanting to write that story, call me up. I'll point you to a whole bunch of people. You should look into how he sources stuff. That's my claim. I'm standing by that claim. But here's the thing. If I go up against Jesse Singel today by myself, it'll be a Twitter shit show for a few days, and his horrible audience will go after me and won't get us anywhere. That's not what I'm interested in. I am interested in a real reporter going and looking at the way he puts together his stories and really asking themselves if it meets a standard. And there's a reason Jesse gets his paycheck from Patreon and not the New York Times. So that is my statement by that. It's very reasonable. Again, I say Jesse has tried to get me fired for criticizing. And his nut job audience has never, like, they don't care about this double standard. It's like, don't criticize Jesse, but he can try to get people fired in back channel. It's ridiculous. It's laughable.
I think you said this is the first time you've talked about that. Are you comfortable saying any more about that, about the details? Like what the material difference or disagreement was about?
So I sent a tweet and at him, and because I don't think he's a good journalist, and I can't remember the details off the top of my head, but it was read in a way that was, and it was, my intention was, Jesse, you suck as a reporter, which I believe that, right? He took it as something just, I don't know if it was a threat or like going beyond a line or whatever, and wrote jink trying to get me fired. So that's what happened.
I don't think I ever knew that. Was this on the Young Turks? Is that the show?
Jenk is someone I work with, yes.
Okay. I don't think I knew that about you. Well, it would certainly be difficult to have any sort of positive feelings towards somebody that tried to get you fired.
But it's not even about that. I don't take that personally. What I'm telling you is I know how Jesse Singel puts his stories together because I was there during Gamergate. I worked with dozens of journalists over Gamergate. I did. Go look it up. There are probably 100 stories. Did plenty of interviews. I worked with plenty of people. I am telling you, Jesse Singel's standards that he holds himself to are not that of the rest of the industry. He decides how he feels about something, and then he fits the facts to come to that conclusion. And, you know, this is what's so frustrating about this moment, because I think you can listen to me today. I'm asking a lot of the same questions that Jesse is. I think I have a lot more compassion in asking them, but I'm not hostile to the question. But I think you've got someone that's made himself the arbiter of this that I just don't think does good work. And I think trans people deserve, frankly, a better journalist looking into this. What was her name? Emily Black.
Bazelon.
That was a 10 out of 10 piece at the New York Times. Fantastic piece. The battle for gender care looked at the history of it. It was objective. It looked at both sides. I wish to God we could make her the person that's out there looking at trans stuff every single day. That was fantastic work. And what did trans Twitter do? They attacked. They made her a controversy. Don't you dare ask questions. And now we don't get those kinds of stories from the New York Times anymore. Someone is going to be asking these questions. And I wish that we could not destroy every credible journalist trying to do this. Sorry, I'm kind of pissed off.
No.
That's a good point. Why do you think the trans Twitter attacked that journalist?
I think that their gut reaction to anything that's not the leftmost narrative is destroy you, just to be really honest. And it's embarrassing and it's unproductive and it's almost like it's a religion. I think trans Twitter is more interested in excising non-believers than getting political progress. And I think it's so bad right now. I genuinely worry we're going to lose all access to healthcare.
Yeah, purity spirals are a thing. Definitely a thing on my side.
Yes, we libertarians.
I feel like I've made it so angry energy. I'm sorry, you asked me the worst question.
I'll tell you, in my imagination, Brianna, I thought what was going to happen is because you've been so based lately, I thought you're just going to be like, "Yeah, that was an old conflict. I regret that there was like bad blood." I like in my imagination, I thought that's what was going to happen.
Do you think I'm being insincere with what I'm saying?
No, not at all. I just wasn't. I made a bad prediction.
Fair enough. I think it's more based to be to stick by your guns. You know, his nut job followers, this really pissed me off. So, you know, I have over 100,000 Twitter followers, and I just don't see everything that gets sent at me. I don't. Twitter is coded in a way, I think people that don't have really high follower Twitter accounts don't know this. So because it can't show you everything, at a certain point, it only shows you stuff that your friends are saying or stuff that goes really, really hyper viral. So there's a storyline that came out there where his people pledged to raise a bunch of money and have me put forward some receipts on this. I genuinely never saw it. Bring a lie detector to my house. I didn't see it. I don't follow Jesse Single. I don't follow TERFs. I don't follow Blocked and Reported. I try very hard to avoid those people because it's not pleasant, right?
Yeah.
So then the storyline they write in their mind is, oh, Brianna's obviously lying because, like, you know, she didn't see this. It's like, how narcissistic are you? And then it's like, oh, what's your proof? Colin Moriarty, the fucking right-wing asshole, like, offered to give me $1,000 or give it to a charity. And I go, oh, gosh, $1,000 on Twitter. That's your proof that I'm lying about not having seen this stuff? Give me a break. If these are the standards that Blocked and Reported feels about what the truth is, it's just vibes. It's just hating your enemies. It's very straightforward.
How do we not fall into that? That's something that I wonder about because, you know, Twitter really amplifies these things and we get siloed there and we all want confirmation of what we think.
Do I seem like someone who wants confirmation of what she thinks or someone who is really like trying to make sure I get it right and will go up against my own side?
I like both.
Yeah.
I like having just enough pushback that I go,
spicy.
That's a good question. But not enough pushback where I'm like, I need to mute my Twitter and then drown myself.
I think it's good to have a process. I think Destiny is exceptional at this, of really looking into claims before making them publicly.
Destiny, the Twitch streamer.
Yes. You know, I really try to do this and it's really paid off professionally. I think it's my background as a former journalist that makes me do that. So, I think that speak your truth, try to be judicious about how you do it, try to be thoughtful, but I think it's that be willing to check and make sure you're not wrong.
There are a few things that I am confident about that I spend a long time thinking about. I know that other people may disagree with them. So, for example, when I had my initial turfening, that was after a year of thought and learning and research and educating myself. But every day on Twitter, there's this stream of a bunch of other things that I have little to no expertise in, just streaming away there. And it's like, if it comes from somebody that I like, I go like, oh, I like this, what this person thinks generally. And so probably what they're saying is right. And there's so much information coming, right? About so much stuff that I know so little about. Honestly, with the Israel-Palestine stuff, I have low confidence in a lot having to do with that because I'm not there and I'm buffered about by the opinions and posts of various people. And I'm aware enough to know what I don't know much about, so I try not to join in. But it's very human nature to want to join in and to want to support people, to want to choose a side, to want to have right opinion. And there's just so much coming at me. It's like, I do feel confident in my knowledge of sex and not a lot else.
Sure. Do you think trans people are claiming sex doesn't exist?
Well, the modern sex? See, when you say trans people, you're talking about a...
Do you think binary trans people believe this generally? I'm talking normal trans people that go get SRS and get on hormones and get
old
married,
school transsexuals, you mean?
Have normal lives, right? Do you think? Yeah.
To be fair, your friend India Willoughby is somebody who claims to have biologically changed sex.
Yeah.
Has she said that?
Yes.
Have a cervix,
including claiming to have a cervix.
Okay, well, that's stupid.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that are called trans. And some of them are my friends, and I do take shit for that from some of the extremists on my side. But I don't think I could say anything like, you know, what the trans community says or what they think. It's like,
but you made a big claim. You said directionally, like, this is what.
No, I didn't say anything.
Believe.
I said I'm really confident most... about my knowledge of sex.
I may have misunderstood.
What sex is.
You. You're confident. Sure. I feel confident about my knowledge of sex.
But that's all that I said. I said I feel confident about my knowledge of sex.
I mean, you know, the whole like trans women claiming they get periods stuff is so cringe. Or there was a discussion last night with a medical doctor that was saying that, you know, GRS is only a approximation cosmetically of women's anatomy, but is not literally women's anatomy. And people were getting angry at that on Twitter. Like, I will certainly agree that that silliness is there, but I personally don't know any trans women that genuinely believe they are like physically the sex that they want to be. I think they feel broken and despondent at wanting to be something that they can never be, but they make their peace with it eventually. So
none who you know except for India Willoughby.
Yeah, and most
yes,
of
fair,
the
fair enough.
Okay.
Problems that I've had, most of the cancellation activity that I've endured hasn't actually been from trans people. It's been from allies. So, you know, my turfening was, in addition to being traumatic, confusing because I had had very good relations with, okay, I can say it, trans people, or as the Turfan would say it, trans identified people. But regardless, I had never had a problem with the trannies, but the allies were a whole other thing and still are, really. That's still the biggest problem.
Sure. Yeah.
If you don't mind me saying, Nina, it's not the Palestinians who are causing riots on the campuses of Ivy League colleges. It's the allies. Who,
yeah, these virtue
it's
signaling.
The fucking allies.
So you're saying it's the meanness by which some people have treated you that's a major factor for your beliefs? Or
No. Yeah. I know what sex is. It's like I'm confident in my knowledge of sex.
Sure.
And like we say, the Turf Tranny Alliance emblem, sex is real. People are weird. So I know people are weird, and it's like, I'm okay with people being weird. The one thing that I was not willing to deny sex as I was being urged to do, but in terms of people's like weirdness, and it's like, you know, go on with your bad self. I'm fine with that.
Do you have issues with adults taking hormones?
I mean, I have like, do I have issues where I would want to determine policy about
that? As a public
that?
Policy perspective, do you have an issue
I
with
would
adults
stay out of that.
To
adults things. Do weird things. Okay. And I don't have sufficient expertise to even, I do know some like vulnerable adults. I have heard from some vulnerable adults who, you know, want there to be a lot more gatekeeping or safeguarding in place for that. So I've heard them, but that's not my main thing.
That's okay. So we can throw the floor out there. Do you have an issue with a trans person changing their legal sex on legal documentation, like a driver's license?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Did you used to?
I didn't used to.
Okay. So do you have an issue with parents working in very strong cases? I think we would all agree that the standards need to be raised. But in the very strongest cases, do you have an issue with parents and a doctor and an extremely dysphoric child giving that child access to transition-related care?
I do now. I didn't used to.
See, so you can dress this up with this happy talk, but like you want you want public policies that are cruel for trans people. And I've got a big issue with that.
I think it's worthwhile to ask Nina, why did you change your mind, though?
No, it's not. I don't, Nina, look, this has been a lovely discussion. You seem like a lovely person. Sure, we'd have a great dinner together. That's not important to me because it's not my job as a public policy professional to be Nina's friend. It's my job to get things done. And like what you're saying, you may need to feel like you're a good person or not hostile. I don't have that assessment because I only care about the policies that you support.
No, that's okay. I answered honestly.
Sure.
I answered not to please you, but
sure.
Honestly. And yeah, that's the honest truth.
How do you feel about abortion?
What?
Are you pro-abortion, if I can ask?
Pro-abortion. Actually, I guess I am pro-abortion, but okay. I prefer the word pro-choice, but yeah, probably of all
fair point
people in that camp, I'm probably more pro-abortion or have been more pro-abortion. My feelings about that, interestingly, have changed with menopause. It's like the fact that it's not a clear and present danger for me has really tempered the strength of my feeling about
that's
abortion
really
stuff,
interesting.
Which is not, it's not cool, right? Like I should be just as passionate, but it's a lot more abstract now. It was a lot more like real. When
I don't think I've ever met a trans person that is not very strongly for women having access to reproductive health care.
Yeah. All right.
I don't have strong feelings.
You don't have strong feelings about that? Really?
I used to, I don't know. I think this is a good episode where we're talking about like evolution of our views in some ways. I'm gonna talk about the policy for a second here. I think the Democrats, set aside the Republicans for a minute. I think the Democrats made a tremendous strategic error across many different states where they could have come and compromised with Republicans to say, fine, let's set our abortion policy to make it like Europe, where it's something like, 13 weeks or 17 weeks or something like that, which is very conservative policy for somebody who wants abortion, because that's basically first trimester stuff. Mm-hmm. And the Democrats wouldn't come to the table and say, you know what, we're in a more conservative area. Let's protect this as much as we can. Instead, they're like, no, we need abortion up to the day of, right? And I think, well, if you really care about making abortion available to women, then you have to make a realistic assessment for your state about what sort of policies might be achievable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this is median voter theory, basic election stuff. Go find enough support so that even though you're in the minority, that you're going to be able to chip away some of the moderates on the other side and get these compromise policies passed. But if you can't even compromise in the states where you're a minority to get some basic protections, do you even care about the practicalities of these types of issues? And I looked around and I'm like, look, a lot of people don't care because we're actually in a regulatory regime right now where abortion medication is easy to get across state lines through online pharmacies. And so anybody who's middle class or higher has pretty easy access to abortion in like 90% of the cases. The women who are at the lowest income levels have much increased difficulties. Mm-hmm. And those women were basically sold out by the left side parties.
Well, let's be clear. The Republicans were the ones that passed that bill.
Well, I know. I know. That's why I say there's nothing you can do about the Republicans.
Let's be honest about who's doing what, though.
Well, I am. That's why I'm saying there's a responsibility for policymakers.
Sure.
When you're the minority party in a red state to try to find a moderate position that will get you a chance to have some policy that protects your constituents. But if the only thing that you do is stick to your guns and not shift at all, not work with other people, not compromise, you're never going to have these types of policies that protect real people.
So I don't disagree with that. I don't, you know, just as I it's hard for me to comment like globally about any of these bills because you're making an assertion. I would need to look at the details. But
yeah,
generally speaking, this is a democracy. You got to compromise in a democracy. So I don't have any issue with the strategy you're putting forward. I think it's well said. And this is actually kind of the course of action that I would advocate for, you know, trans people. I think we need to stop going after these policies like trans women in sports and all this stuff that does not really affect a lot of people's lives and guarantee a certain threshold of access to the commons and take it from there. That is what makes sense to me. Nina, I want to come back to you and ask a really direct question. How is being a TERF, like you keep mentioning it very, very, like you've mentioned being a TERF more than I've mentioned being a progressive. Why do you think this is kind of a bedrock of your identity? What I've always wanted to ask a TERF this, what is it that makes this something you kind of want to base, like how you want, what's something you want people to know about you so they can define you by that?
Oh gosh. It's not that I want people to know about me and define me like that. It's a
you
response.
You made a button that says TERF Tranny Alliance, like you do.
Yeah. It's because that label changed my life.
Changed your life.
Yeah.
How?
It ended my career as such. Okay. It ended the circulation of my work, which has nothing to do with any of this stuff.
You might have seen it, actually. Have you seen this video? This land is mine.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen that.
You might have. It's a cartoon. It's you know, like from the caveman to the ancient Egyptians, Assyrians, Romans are all fighting each other to this. Okay. It's the most popular thing I've ever made. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I used to be well known as an animation filmmaker.
That's so cool. And,
yeah, it was cool. I had a career speaking and I was invited to all these campuses and film festivals and all that stuff. And I got canceled, like well and truly canceled because I'm a TERF. And yeah. So I use it. I don't want to it's not a matter of simple irony. It's like I just got so branded with it that I say that. It's not that I don't want people to think of me that way. It's just happened so much, you know, like, in fact, there are so many people who are like, oh, wow, I didn't know you were an artist. Or, you know, wow, I didn't know you were a filmmaker. I just thought you were a TERF. And this includes other people on my side, but it's all very sad and confusing. Would resuscitate my career, I would give it up in a heartbeat, but that's not going to happen.
So I think this is something that happens to a lot of people. Like, I think this is what happened to Dave Chappelle. I think it's what happened to J.K. Rowling, clearly. I think it's what happened to Elon Musk. And I don't deny that there's, like, I know this firsthand. I really do. For instance, there's a Washington Post story that came out a few years ago about what happens when GamerGators reach out to me and apologize. And I accept that apology because I've come to the conclusion, for me personally, there's no value holding on to that hate. So I'm not saying anything. Like, I'm agreeing with you, this is a problem. I'm agreeing it radicalizes people. What I don't understand is, like, holding on to that part of your identity, like basing your identity on that. That seems really unhealthy to me.
Corinna, do I base my identity on that?
I mean, do you?
It's hard to say.
It's like when you introduce yourself on the podcast, you say, I'm a canceled artist. I think that's really your identity. And it's not because you were driving and hit somebody with your car because you were texting, and that's why you were canceled, Caitlyn Jenner. It was because you said if you were born with a penis, then you're a man. And that's why. So true story.
Seems pretty cruel.
What's that?
Cruel.
It seems a little cruel to me. Yeah.
Cruel. Well, whether or not it's cruel.
I think I also said women don't have penises.
Yeah. It's just a biological fact. I don't think it's cruel, but let's not argue for that. I want to tell you something. There has been two or three or maybe four occasions that Nina has sent me emails from schools or from film festivals where they say, "Oh God, I love your movie, Sita Sings the Blues. I love your movie, Sadomasochism. I love your artwork. We really want to bring you to our festival. We really want to bring you to our university." And Nina says, because she forwards me the emails, Nina says, "Sure, I want you to Google, make sure that you're okay with me coming, because there's been a controversy in the past." And they write back and they say, "Oh, and this is like repeated. Oh, well, we can't risk pissing off the LGBTQ center in our city by hosting you. So I'm sorry, we have to rescind our invitation to you." And they're like, "There's no way that doesn't affect you."
I don't have much sympathy for this, just in the sense that, so look at me. You know, I've taken a really hard stand on Jewish dignity. I think anyone can look at my Twitter there. And I'm sure moving forward, that is going to translate to fewer opportunities, more opportunities in some camp, fewer in another, right? But that was the choice I made, and I'm comfortable with that. Why do you not have to play with those same rules that I have to as a public figure?
Obviously, I do have to play with these same rules.
Right.
These were not the rules, you know, when I started playing, but they became the rules. And of course I accept reality. I'm not sitting here going like, I'm accepting reality.
Sure.
That's what happened. I don't think it's right or good, but it's,
well, I agree with that.
The way things, it's what happened. It's what we're dealing with. So, yeah. There is this thing though, like not recently, I do wonder, there's almost this feedback that I'm getting.
Mm-hmm.
That my words create reality. I guess it's very postmodernist. Because, for example, I sometimes talk about or write about my past mm-hmm. relationships with men. I have been celibate for the last 5 years, but I have spoken and written about various misadventures with men. And the feedback that I get is that from talking about this, that means that I really want a man and want to be with men. And that's not what I meant at all. And I'm putting that in the same category that if I say, like, you know, "Oh yeah, I'm a TERF," which is shorthand for me saying, it's a much longer story, that this is my identity. And it's like, well, so if I talk about this stuff in my past, that is giving the impression that that's my identity now, that my identity is, you know, someone who's, you know, a heterosexual female horn dog going after men and making stupid decisions. And it's like, no, I haven't done that for 5 years, but I talk about it. And I'm just wondering about that. It's like, I'm like, should I just not talk about that anymore? Like, would that change reality? Would that change who I am if I just stop saying that I've been canceled? Will that change my reality? I don't know.
I think this is what I find really interesting. I would bet a lot of money that if we compare the number of cancellations or mean tweets you've gotten, I would bet a lot of money I have more by factor of more than 10, if not 100. I bet a lot of money on that. And I would never describe myself as canceled. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like I've made public positions. I've lived with my choices. This is the game.
I'm not canceled because of mean tweets. It's not because of mean tweets.
you're quote unquote canceled because your public persona, the way people interpret you when they research you, is a political mess, and that limits opportunities. So if I went out there tomorrow and I started using the N-word and putting a swastika up on the flagpole outside of my house, are people not allowed to make judgment calls about who to work with? Because
I want to clarify.
When
you say the N-word, you mean non-binary people don't exist, that N-word.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay, all right.
No, I'm being really serious. I mean, why are people not allowed to make assessments about who they want to associate with?
Why are you resentful about that? I want to comment.
Sure.
I'm semi-canceled.
I want to answer to my question.
Have to. Yeah. No, I think Nina might agree, though. We want there to be a society where there is tolerance.
Sure.
Right? Tolerance for ideas that challenge us, that require us to think about and process other points of views, for us to reflect, for us to be able to change our minds, for us to absorb new types of information. And if we attitudinally decide that people who actually do that, that cause us to reassess how we think about things, are a threat to us, and that the way that we control that threat is to eliminate them from participating in society, that attitude is a harmful attitude.
I agree.
You ask, what's wrong with people excluding you from your career or from your opportunities because they're just making their own decision about whether to associate with you or not?
Because I think the answer is, in my view, is you're not making an argument. You are saying some stuff that it's cruel. And I think there are some people that are going to find that dehumanizing and offensive. There are many ways to make these same arguments that are not reflexively cruel. I think that if we're going through and talking about the public policies that you're advocating, I think they're public policies that really dehumanize trans people, in my view.
What are the public policies that I'm advocating?
The ones you said. You want to stop children who are extreme cases of gender dysphoria from being able to transition with, like we agreed, high bar, doctor, parents involved, highest bar there. Yeah. You want to stop legal transition on documents to allow trans women and men access to civil society. These don't get us anywhere as a society. They're just good old fashioned prejudice. And I think it's okay for that. You're not talking about something with compassion. You're not looking for an answer. You're looking to put your boot on the neck of someone. And that's where I don't agree with you.
So you're completely persuaded that it would not be possible at all under any circumstance to make a good faith argument for the positions that you're describing as cruel.
I think you can make the good faith argument, perhaps, but I think it just feels it just feels like the goal is ultimately dehumanization.
I think you are incorrect. I don't.
Maybe I am?
Yeah. But I do want to mention that when you were talking about me, you gave as an example, if I used the N-word and then raised a swastika.
Sure.
So once again, I have been compared to a Nazi.
So have I.
A racist and a Nazi in not so many words.
And you are giving us a certain salute right now, Nina.
I'm covering my eyes from the sun because
I'm giving an extreme example of someone you would not associate with. because their views are cruel.
Yeah, you and just have that, you know, racist and a Nazi. Because I say
at the end of the day, most Americans stand for dignity for people. I saw this in Mississippi growing up. And, you know, again, I don't want to be contentious with you. I don't know. Yeah. I think there's a distance between the way your co-host is talking about this and the way that you do. If one comes across as empathetic and this is my view and here's how we can make everyone meet everyone's needs. And the other is kind of saying there's a hierarchy here and I'm on top and you're on the bottom.
Yeah. Get down there, Nina.
Do you think that's true, Karina?
Well, I think that while you and I have some degrees of difference on some of these issues, I think either of us could make a very strong case centering human dignity of all people, of all parties, mm-hmm. for any of the positions that we support. I think that one of my positions is that one of the reasons why we see, I should ask just as a side, do you think that there are kids who identify as trans because of social contagion, Brianna?
Of course.
Okay. So let's,
you're not argue. Being the business of honesty if you can't admit that. Of
yeah.
course.
Okay.
Yes.
So no arguments about kids who the label that's used right now is ROGD, but however they come to be sure. identified, I believe is because many of them feel socially isolated, and by having an opportunity to be part of something that gives them meaning, and as part of having meaning, it gives them self-confidence and it gives them some dignity and it gives them a place in the world. It gives them some answers
sure.
to questions that they've been asking and not being had given satisfactory answers up to that point. I think that this idea of inclusion is extremely important. So I would never advocate a policy that says there are people who should be socially exiled. So any policy that we come up with ought to be something that takes into account the need and the necessity of ensuring that everybody has a place in the world.
Sure.
But I could still argue for these things that you would describe as cruel, but also give you my complete assurance that anything that I would propose as a policy would take into account the dignity of every person.
So give me an example.
Well, actually, before you do that,
or either,
can you ask please. Brianna, can you ask Karina for Karina's opinions on the same positions that you or policies that you asked me about?
Well, Karina, do you identify yourself as a TERF?
No, I've been identified as a TERF, though. I'm not a radical feminist.
So have I, yeah.
No, can you?
I'm not a radical
feminist.
Can you
ask Karina about the scenario of the parents and the doctor and the kid and also changing the documents?
Yeah.
I feel like you're asking me to be kind of a monkey, which is
no.
All right,
I'll just say it.
Yeah.
So, I have documents that the documents I carry daily say sure. F on them. I have sure. other documents that I don't carry daily that say M on them, and in my opinion, most people who identify as trans, their biological markers are so clear that referring to a document is not going to be the thing that outs most people. It's mm-hmm. it's usually going to be kicking over boxes at the GameStop, right? There's usually going to be some other sort of marker of sex. On the one with the transition kids, look, I would be persuaded if there were good quality studies that showed that socially or medically transitioning kids led to net beneficial outcomes in the long run. I don't think that there have been cohorts that have growing up now. We've seen that in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. There's a cohort in the United States and in Washington that's growing up, and we'll learn more about them over the years. But I think that apart from these clinical settings where there's going to be a high amount of good quality research coming out of it, I don't think that it's good to transition children.
So, okay, I hear you on that. I think the stumbling block that you're going to run across there is many times throughout the show, you've said it's really important to you to distinguish between non-binary people and quote-unquote old school transsexuals, right? Different thing, legal process to doing that.
Yeah,
I think that the gender marker is a very straightforward way to do that. I don't know what the law is today, but the way it used to be is you couldn't change your gender marker until you'd had, you know, GRS, SRS, whichever one.
Oh, yeah, it's not, it's hardly like that anywhere now.
But I think that that kind of policy, I think if you're willing to go through a vagioplasty, I think you belong on the team.
Yeah, that's 1990s thinking. That's not 2020s thinking.
We don't agree on that stuff, right? So look, I hear what you're saying, but you know, there's, I think you're a really nice person. I hope we can be friends after this. But I think you've got to admit your opinions are pretty far step out of what most transsexuals.
Oh, they are.
I'm not talking about non-binary. I'm saying transsexuals.
I know. But
so you agree you have fringe opinions.
I think it's fair for you in your position to say I have fringe opinions. Yeah, I think that's fair. I wouldn't call them fringe opinions because my opinions are probably in sync with 80% of the population, but I would say they're fringe in the trans community.
I don't know if I agree with that. And my entire job is to look at public policy polling and help develop messaging about that. You know, I don't agree with you on that.
Yeah. Well, if it's not 80%, nevertheless, I don't think that they'd be considered fringe among the U.S. population.
Most people just haven't thought about it that much. Most people look at trans rights and they're just like, I'm really telling you, when it comes down to it, Americans just want their neighbors to be treated fairly.
Oh, I know. But see, here's, you might not appreciate this.
Sure.
But for people like me who transitioned so that I would have the best chance of assimilating as my target gender, right? Mm-hmm. That was the concept back then. All of the trans rights stuff that's happened over the last decade has been predicated on a public perception that a trans person is somebody who has, as you say, a vaginoplasty, somebody who's or phalloplasty, somebody who's had taken cross-sex hormones, somebody who's manner and dress is that approximating that of their target sex.
Sure.
That is what all trans advocacy has been built on for the last 10 years. But in reality, it's people who flaunt that sort of assimilation. It is trans rights are human rights. It is visibly trans. It's wearing the pink cat ears and the chokers, right? I know that I'm exaggerating a little bit, but this is the demographic now that identifies as trans. The Washington Post last spring, so early 2023, published a statistic that said 2 out of 3 people who identify as trans don't pursue any sort of form of medicalization.
It's crazy. Yeah.
So the policies that are supposed to cover anybody who just self-declares themselves as trans, that those policies that were beneficial to people who were trying to assimilate in the opposite sex role, those policies are now being used to exploit and harm women.
Sure.
And that can't go on.
But this is where we, and Nina, you're probably going to agree with me. Like, I have a lot of empathy for that. In my group of friends, we have no love. Like, did you see this Planet Fitness story about the pre-op person that goes in there and they're waving their dick around?
Like, not even pre-op.
Right.
So maybe just a man who claims trans status.
My understanding of the story from what I read is it was somebody that was more of on the fetishist side. You're not going to convince me that someone that goes in there, I have never met a trans woman that I'm friends with that would not do that and would rather shoot herself first than do that.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about protecting trans women's spaces from that, I'm 1,000% on board with you about that. We need policies about this, but the TERFs lack credibility and the reason why your political project is doomed is you take it to such a dehumanizing place and you give away the game with your language where it's really clear you're not trying to protect women's spaces. You don't like trans people. Americans are not bullies.
I'm a notorious tranny lover, though. I really like trans people.
I don't think you are.
This is what Nina gets accused of by the hardline TERFs.
Sure.
Yeah.
Tranny lover.
Just to be clear, if I say that somebody is male or female, and if I use sex-based pronouns, that is not done of malice. That is not done as an attempt to dehumanize. I don't think there's anything wrong with sex, the reality of sex. And
sure.
So when you say that it's cruel,
it's mean. Yeah, it's dehumanizing.
I think it can only be dehumanizing if I like it's not remotely dehumanizing for me.
Of course it is. Of course it is. If someone goes and gets surgery and takes hormones and they've wanted to be a girl so bad they could kill themselves for their entire life, and they are trying to make a good faith effort to assimilate and go through life, and you are so insecure in who you are, you've got to call them a man instead of just be polite. Like, of course that's cruel. Of course that's a character flaw.
You know, I've been trying to genocide Corinna for a couple years
now. Y'all keep going to jokes. I'm talking about some serious stuff. Do you hear me? Like, that's really dehumanizing.
I'm telling... I do hear you.
I don't know we agree on that. and I guess this is the thing sometimes when you have to interrogate your priors, right? I'm going to go back to Israel and Gaza for a second.
Okay.
Because when we started off talking, we're like, you know what? War has cruelty as part of it. You can't prosecute a war without there being there's not deliberate cruelties in the best cases. Sometimes there are deliberate cruelties, but in the most noble cases where war is being prosecuted, it is for a cause of eliminating a threat to your people. It's not to harm other people. It's to protect your people, right? But there are, we know that there are children, Israeli children who've been killed. We know there's Palestinian children who've been killed. So we accept that this is a side effect of war. There's justifications for the war. This is something that's happening. Somebody could say, well, it sounds like you're okay with children dying. Right? You hate children. You hate children. If you didn't hate children, you would oppose the war. And we go, no. I don't hate children. That it's well, I do.
I do oppose the war. I want that war to end very quickly.
Yes, by not through a ceasefire and then another war 6 months from now.
Correct.
But by having the belligerent, having Hamas defanged so that it cannot prosecute more terrorist attacks against Israel, and by Israel respecting the borders of the Palestinian people.
And the hostages being released.
And the hostages being
all
released.
Of them.
But our critics, we believe that. It sounds like we all three believe that. Our critics would say, well, it sounds like you just are in favor of people being victimized and hurt. You're in favor of children starving to death. And I don't think any of us would say, of course we're not in favor of that, right? All jokes aside, we wouldn't say that, but our critics could accuse us of that because we believe something that as a consequence of what we believe has some side effects to it that we don't want, that we don't wish for, but are part of a belief that we know that this happens on the path to long-term peace because it's not avoidable.
Under this metaphor, you can justify literally anything. Like, take it to, I don't find this a compelling argument because it's like, show me an edge case you cannot use this for any crazy belief. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying, well, but we're poisoning really talking, people? We don't need to, you were using a load-bearing analogy. That is what you were doing. I'm
I
saying,
don't know that term.
It's, you're trying to make an argument through an analogy, and there's no structure for it. You're trying to carry the entire argument by analogy. I don't think that's true. I think that if there's a credible path forward for us to get out of this culture war and to back like the excesses of trans activism and to make sure that trans people have dignity, it's not going to come from like a cheery fuck you to people that transition and calling them men. That's just being an asshole. It is. It costs you nothing to be kind to someone.
Oh my.
It costs you nothing.
I don't think it's kind. You said yourself that all the trans people that you know that their natal sex. They know that they don't literally change sex.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's like, how would I be kind?
Do you think them finding this wildly offensive doesn't matter? Do you think some esoteric argument doesn't matter?
Well, let me just say that I know I have quite a few trans friends, or I have some trans friends, and they don't, they're not like deeply wounded by me referring to their sex. They're not deeply wounded by me using sex-based pronouns.
Okay.
They're not. Allies are, but they're not.
Do you really think a TERF is going to make friends with trans people that are representative of a typical cohort? Like, come on.
I'm not here to make friends. I mean, I would like to, but
it's not about you making friends. It's about interrogating your position. You said you wanted to do that earlier on. That's what I'm
doing. No, I've done that. I'm okay with my position.
I'm gonna play my trans card again since I get to. You're right that I am not representative of the beliefs, but you know what? I would like to be. I would like to make the argument that if you know who you are,
sure,
and if you have a high amount of self-esteem and you can make realistic, I hate saying realistic, let's scratch that out. I'll leave it in the edit, but scratch that out. If you know who you are, it doesn't offend you when somebody describes you in factual terms. It's not offensive to me if Nina says that I'm overweight.
I've never said that.
I am though. I need to lose weight. It's not offensive if Nina calls me male or says that I'm an adult human male, which is a man. Mm-hmm. That's not offensive to me because it's a fact of my reality.
Sure.
But that would have been offensive to me at a point when I was suffering from this tremendous cognitive dissonance of trying to manifest something that was not possible for me to completely manifest. The appearance, arguably, maybe, but the actual attainment wasn't possible. Mm-hmm. And I would have seen it as a form of cruelty because the thing that would have hurt me about it is that I knew that it was true.
Sure.
And I wasn't ready to handle the truth of it. And what I would really like to do is instead of my position being an outlier, I'd really like for other people who have followed a path like mine to be able to hear that and go, yeah, this is where I am.
Your course of action is tough love for those trannies that are out there that don't have your level of enlightenment.
Let's not call it tough, but let's say at some point you want to just lay down the burden and be at peace because it is a very difficult thing to wake up every day and go into the world with the expectations that everybody sees you as your target sex, and for you to try to do everything so that everybody sees you as your target sex, and for one person to correctly, maybe not even intentionally, just subconsciously, say something that correctly identifies you, and for your day to fall apart. That used to happen to me.
You're making an argument that is so far beyond. You're saying for you, yourself, you found this valuable. And then you're inventing a stereotype in your mind of a trans person that is so supposedly weak that they're going to fall apart.
Well, that was me.
Hold on.
That was
me. My trans friends are not like that.
Yeah.
I'm talking about basic human respect for each other in a democracy. That's what I'm talking about. Both of your policy prescriptions are cruelty to your neighbors. It's dehumanizing. You've got some esoteric arguments about your spiritual journey you've been on. God bless. I'm glad you came to a good place. It's not how most people feel. And it's a terrible public policy.
Yeah. I mean, I think compelled speech and requiring people to lie about sex is a terrible public policy.
Sure. I think it's a bad policy to say you can't say the N-word also, but that doesn't mean I can't make up my mind that you fundamentally lack character.
Okay. I mean, but you keep switching back and forth between policy and personal stuff. Like everything that we say about our personal views, you say that we're saying about policy, and then you'll switch.
Well, for me, it's fair because I advocate for policies.
And then you switch. It's like, we have, you know, personal opinions and the way that we are in the world. But I can tell you,
but it's not benign. It has huge consequences.
Yes, and it has huge consequences to compare women that acknowledge biological sex to Nazis and racists.
It's not. This is a lie. You are not involved in a project of acknowledging the reality of biological sex. You're not. I've talked to you for 2 hours now. That's not your project. You have a project to knock down trans people to where they're at a certain peg. I disagree with your project.
Okay. I disagree with your characterization of my project.
That's fine. We got the tape. People can look at it. There's a reason TERFs don't have a good reputation. Like,
why? Because they're cruel?
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'm playing my card because I'll talk about the trans community.
Sure.
I think that there's a good reason the trans community doesn't have a good reputation.
I agree with them.
The cruelty is part of that.
So do you not see this as a cycle of two extremists? Do you not see, I'm coming here today and I am giving some extremely moderate opinions on this.
Yeah.
Extreme. My trans politics are not radical, but I am advocating for dignity of everyone involved.
Except for me.
Yeah.
But you don't see that we think that too.
Of course I am. Do you have any idea how much, if you made a list of women who have advocated for women in the tech industry and really put shit on the line for it, I would be on that list. If you don't think I fucking stand for women, you don't know me and you don't know my career.
I've had
bricks thrown through my window for women's rights.
That's not what I said.
No, nobody's saying that.
I said for me. You've said that I'm cruel and you've likened what I say to, you know, you say that I want to dehumanize people, that I'm out for trans people.
I think
that's
the outcome. Yeah.
And so I'm just saying that, you know, it doesn't really feel like I'm being afforded dignity or good faith.
For you, the person I've met today, yes. But if you're talking about the public policy of women and having women in women's spaces to reach some common sense public policies where a woman can go to Planet Fitness and not see some pervert whipping their dick around, I'm 100% there for that. I don't have to like you if you have mean positions. That's compelled speech. I don't know why your feelings are hurt about this.
Could I ask a quick question?
Sure.
So you're talking about cruelty And I get what you said about you said structural, not a structural argument. I forget what the term was, but forgetting that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe of either Nina or me or both of us that our motivation is cruelty? Or do you think it's that regardless of our motivation, that the effect of our preferred policies would cause cruelty? Do you think our motivation might be noble and that we're misguided, or do you think that we're just inherently cruel?
So your question is, do I think you're inherently cruel people? I think both of you are damaged in some ways that brought you together. Corinna, I think, you know, you've really been exiled from the trans community, and I think that's hurt you. And Nina, I think you're really resentful about losing your career. And maybe you should ask yourself why you couldn't recover from that. Like, I've recovered from a million times worse stuff than that. It didn't happen serendipitously. It happened by thinking through the next move and doing some stuff. I think both of you are kind of damaged people, and that's where it's coming from.
Well, I don't think that there's any way to argue
yeah, I'm not argue with you that.
I mean, I agree that I'm damaged, but I don't think that's my motivation.
I think that you have an assessment. I think this is what I see in my career is I see a lot of transsexual women that are really frustrated with this non-binary stuff, and they want to have a different conversation than what trans, and the whole reason I'm here today and the reason I'm talking about this more is I think we need some people with some common sense political skills to come out here and make that argument. You're going to be seeing me doing it in the public a lot more in the next few weeks, actually. So that is my political mission. But, you know, do I think your mission is cruelty? I think I need to get to know you better to assess that. I mean, Nina, why can't you just like have a second act? Why can't you go do some new work? Why, if you've got these animation skills, are you going to tell me there's no one that's going to hire you? Like, what is causing you to stop?
Oh, I've continued to make work. I make quite a bit of work.
So how do you feel canceled?
People don't see it.
Okay.
But I do my thing. It's just that people don't.
Yeah.
See it. It's called deplatforming, so there's no platform.
So you feel like you have no role to play in your own destiny?
No.
Nina did a comic book that was about online censorship.
Mm-hmm.
And Indiegogo pulled the comic.
Yeah, after it was funded. It was a crowdfunding thing. And while I was waiting for the money, they pulled it and automatically refunded all the backers and denied me access to the records without explanation.
Do you understand how they might look at some of the things you said and like want to not be associated with hate speech?
Oh,
do you not think like that's compelled speech, basically?
Yes, it's illiberal. It is illiberal to do that.
I think private corporations can make their own call about who they want to be associated with.
They can.
Yeah.
They can, but it is illiberal to take a person and say, you've said something that I don't like. You've offended my employees. and therefore, you cannot use our platform anymore. It's illiberal.
After having used it. Like it's.
That's not the argument I made that you offended their employees. It's hate speech.
Well,
why
you,
did they
let's,
have to be associated with hate speech?
Can you define hate speech?
No, I'm not going to go down that road.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just grant that it's hate
speech. I'm not going to grant that it's hate speech.
Well, I know. Hang on for a second. I don't think it's hate speech either, but let's grant for a second. Should Nina be banned from... If all the restaurants in her town wanted to ban her...
If I am personally in charge, I would not ban you. I have no issue with that going forward. I think that
this
political project of trying to censor TERFs has backfired. If anything, I want to give you a microphone and let as many people see this so your reputation continues to suffer. I'm a huge favor of giving TERFs a platform. So no, if you're asking me, but do I think Indiegogo has a decision, has a right to decide who they're going to be associated with? Of course they do.
Well, let's say I'm afraid of this actually, because the acceptance of trans people in public has rapidly been regressing.
Yes.
Public support. So if Indiegogo were to say anybody who advocates for trans rights should not have access to the platform, mm-hmm. I would also call that illiberal.
Sure.
But you would be like, well, it's their platform, whatever.
How is trans people existing hate speech? How is that hurting another group? That's an entirely different situation.
Well, let's say that I make the assessment that it is. Because hate speech is not an absolute, it's a relative.
Can you give me an example of a group existing? Like, come on, let's get real. Give me an example of a group just existing that is many people consider hate speech. This is a fantastically poor. Like, come on. Give me anyone.
People who clip their fingernails in public.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Like, do that shit at home, right? But it's not about an entire group of people. Let's say I'm the owner of the platform now, mm-hmm. and I say these people are let's say I'm a parent of a kid, and I feel like my parent has fallen into, or my child has fallen into this as a cult, one of these ROGD kids that we all agree exist. And I say, as the owner of this platform, I don't want to allow any of this to be promoted anymore, because I, my own child has been hurt by it. I'm going to not allow access to any materials that promote this as an ideology.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not saying, how you characterize it as a group
Would
of people.
I support this? No, of course not.
Because it's illiberal.
Right.
Right. So as a principle.
But it's bad for business. Like if someone did that, they would very quickly find their platform under attack, and most people would side against them.
Yeah, but Nino is a victim of in the same way, and did not get a huge outpouring of support.
Right. Which should tell you something about your views.
Because I deserved it.
Yeah, they're unpopular.
They're cruel. We share many of the same opinions about policy,
yeah.
but I don't need to dehumanize people. That's the difference at play here.
Well, I think we are not going to agree on what constitutes dehumanization, because for me, it's got to be a dehumanization has to involve identifying a person as not having humanity.
Yeah, I mean, men and women are human.
Yeah, but people who clip their fingernails in public are animals.
We're talking to people with some basic respect, right? I mean, come on, let's get real.
Sort of.
I mean, I'm getting real is
treating people with the way they want to be treated, right? Like,
no, I'm not down with that.
Yeah, you're not treating.
If I showed up at your house and I started eating pork or like violating some Jewish like tradition, would that be treating me with respect?
Fingernails.
You would throw me out, of course. Right?
I eat pork rinds, but you can't clip your fingernails, and you can do it in the bathroom.
Sure.
There are, you know what? There's quite a lot that I tolerate, considering somebody is speaking in good faith and has goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there's people that adhere to very sexist Abrahamic religions, and they don't mean anything against me personally. But they adhere to mm-hmm. those religions, and they act according to whatever principles they have around those religions. And I can look at that and go, like, they're misogynists and they're promoting misogyny and they're cruel.
That's right.
But I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. I just think this is a person who's, you know, acting according to their beliefs. And
but this is where your analogy falls apart again, because that's not the question. Would you invite that? Would you be good friends with that person? Would you have an assessment of their character if they're doing that? Of course you would. If they tried to make that public policy, which is the job of TERFs, would you have a problem with that? Of course you would. So, like, do you see how that is you in this scenario?
Now, you already agreed that in terms of public policy, you're in favor of me being able to use sex-based language.
We're talking about
already said that.
Trans people.
You've just said that I'm cruel and, you know.
I am making a personal
assessment.
You're
making a personal, right. Something is so not related to policy. So we don't have to keep making the personal into policy. I'm just saying that I don't make these same judgments about people that you do.
I want to come back. You gave an example of someone, you're clearly alluding to Muslims, which hold like certain attitudes.
I wasn't. I promise you, okay. I wasn't.
So Orthodox. Okay, fair. Someone, Abrahamic religions.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
So, like the Jews.
So you're talking extremely Orthodox Jews and how that could be like very conservative.
Whatever I was thinking, I promise you, I did not have a picture of Muslims in my mind.
Okay, fair enough. So you are talking about people like that. How does that link to what you were just saying? Because I don't think it does.
Sure. I mean, like if someone, I could have somebody in my house who's anti-abortion. I could have somebody in my house who...
I've run for Congress. I've done that 1,000 times. Oh my God.
Yeah. I could have somebody in my house who really thinks that, you know, married sex should only happen between a married man and a woman. I could have all that. And I could, it's like, and they can say all that. They can say all that and have their opinions and their ideas about reality. And they, you know what? I could even have, like, there's a cartoonist who I really admire who's gotten like really anti-Semitic lately.
Is it Scott Adams?
No.
Okay. Oh, it's Stone Toss.
No,
Stone Toss. You love Stone Toss?
No, it's not Stone Toss.
Okay, so coming back to this, if someone like one of these Columbia students dropping this like let's annihilate Israel, dropping this like kill Jews stuff that we've seen so many videos about, I wouldn't have that in my house. They may have good intentions. They may think they're fighting for Palestine, but they are fundamentally a threat to my Jewish brothers and sisters. That matters to me. That's a character test. So if a TERF has that same attitude, even if in their mind they are benign, I think it's fine for people to choose not to associate with them professionally and personally.
Of course. But let me just, take some umbrage about being compared to a genocidal movement. But go on, Corinna.
That's fine. Can I step in as a producer really quick and then take umbrage, Nina? So normally we don't record this long, and I want to be respectful to Brianna's.
I'm having a good time.
Time. So I want to check in with you to see how far along you are. However, I would like to start winding things down because I have obligations that I'm going to have to hit in about 30 minutes.
Fair point.
And I'm missing a Passover Seder.
Oh my God.
Oh, you are. That's true.
That's okay. I'll just come for dessert.
So let's let you take umbrage and then let's try to do a...
What does that mean, take umbrage?
Offense, to be offended.
In this context, I'm not offended. I'm looking...
No, Nina's.
No. Okay. I took umbrage at being compared to people calling for genocide.
An analogy based on current events on something we talked about at the beginning of this.
Yeah, I'm not trying to genocide trans people.
Do you want fewer trans people? It sounds like
you do. What?
Want fewer trans people?
No.
We all do. No, we all do.
I guess it depends on how you define trans people. Do I want people to...
All three of us do.
I guess you mean different things, right? Like, so Corinna, I think you want fewer people medicalized when they can't consent.
Yeah, for the young people who are experiencing social contagion and are developing trans identities because it's the thing that all their friends are doing. I want there to be fewer of them.
I think wanting a better screening protocol is not wanting fewer trans people. It is wanting people to get the correct healthcare that is
absolutely
proven to work.
But for a lot of these people, they're going to end up having medicalization and then detransition, and that's going to lead to permanent body modifications and often scarring and disability. I don't want people to have to go through a gender journey if we can find out ahead of time that they shouldn't have transitioned to begin with. So I don't want those trans people to exist, because a lot of people who would have been filtered out 20 years ago aren't being filtered out anymore. And
if you could push a button and stop trans people, if you could develop a test that would figure out who's going to be trans and push that button and give the mom an opportunity to abort that baby, would you push that button?
After how many weeks?
Whenever, I don't know. Early on.
Sorry. That's a callback.
Sure.
That is a question that mixes two things. So let me reframe it a little bit and see if you agree with your framing. And if you do, I'll answer it. And if not, we'll argue about the framing. Let's say there was a test that you could administer a 10-year-old, and the test was 100% accurate because of clinical screening. We have complete confidence in the test. This 10-year-old is going to grow up and transition. Can they start transition as a child? If I trusted the test, I would say sure.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not in a universe where that test
that's
is.
That's not really the question I'm asking, though.
I'm talking like,
do you think, would you push a button and like, do you think being trans is a deformity, like Down syndrome? And we need
it's a complex phenomenon that in a lot of ways is a result of people trying to find a coping mechanism for being themselves in a society where if they don't transition, they will have to be outcasts.
Sure.
So I don't think anybody's innately trans. I don't think anybody's born trans. I think it's something that we learn to internalize in a society that has not enough outlets for people who are weirdos.
Okay. What about you, Nina? Would you push that button?
This is a button where if a fetus is trans,
if someone is going to be trans, would you want that child to be aborted?
I mean, not more than any other child, which is maybe saying yes. But if there were a test,
that would determine
whether a fetus was a TERF, would you abort it?
No, of course not.
Okay. Well, there we go.
But hold on, this really comes to the heart of the matter. Like, do you think trans people have something valuable to give society, or do you think it's just something wrong with
them? I think trans people are people. And of course,
that's not an answer.
Yes, they're people like other people. They contribute to
society. So you think the trans experience innately has value to it that adds something to society?
I don't know. That's not really what I think about when I think about the contributions of trans people. I think of, you know, art or literature or, you know, programming or whatever it is that humans contribute to the world.
Yeah, but that's something else. I'm saying the trans experience itself of growing up and wanting to be something so much that you would die and doing everything you can to make it to the other side and learning a lot more about how the other side lives and probably learning some stuff along the way that in the best case scenario is going to make you compassionate. Do you think that has value?
What, Corinna? You're pointing to the Disenchanter.
I am.
What do you mean by that?
You turned my trans experience into a art. So obviously you do have some value for that.
Is that what you
think?
This
is the world that we're in. I mean, the actual world.
Well, it sounds like you're talking about your friend, which is different. I'm saying it's an aggregate population.
I mean,
this seems like a really easy answer to question to answer.
It would be hard for me to point at any population and be like, you know, the Irish have done so much for us.
Do you think
actually,
black people
I'm part Irish.
Added something to the American character?
Everybody adds something. Oh, yeah. Every group adds something.
That's right. So you think, but you don't seem to think trans people have that.
I don't think any group should be venerated.
I'm not saying veneration. I'm saying having a view worth hearing.
I guess this might be bias on my part, maybe on yours also, Nina. But I guess the reason why it's difficult to answer the question as it's posed is it does sound like, do you venerate trans people?
I'm trying to venerate.
And I don't venerate trans people.
This is how I feel. I think that maybe this is my own point of view because I really rose to national prominence in the gender role in the gender wars of Gamergate. But I've really come to think about this 10 years later as a real communication breakdown. We had women in the video game industry that were being treated like shit because of structural sexism, and you had some incels. And the incel problem has gotten a million times worse in the last decade, and we have a real fundamental problem with boys failing to launch, failing to be socialized, and we need a public policy about this. And when I think about the people who I've talked to that really understand that divide, it's trans people. And I think that is a very valuable perspective. And I just don't, I think it's really surprising to me that you don't, neither of you find value there.
Well, it felt like, I don't, Nina, if you agree, please tell me. It felt like a loaded question.
It's not loaded. I mean, this very genuinely.
I mean, I don't know. I guess when I think about, when I think about that contribution, it includes a whole bunch of messages like suck my girl dick and a whole lot of that. And also like death threats and things like that. So, you know, it's like, yeah, okay. And I'm like, you know, in this great wide world of ours, there's all kinds of diversity and hallelujah to all of it, but it's not really my favorite culture, but I wouldn't be interested in denying the rest of the world these gifts.
I think we'd all agree. So first off, you've gotten death threats. I get death threats every day. I know the toll that takes on you, and I'm genuinely sorry that shouldn't happen. Yeah, I agree. Like the trans community has, you know, we could say gamers are assholes and incels are assholes. I have no issue saying trans people are assholes online generally. You know, I think that there's a way for the movement to course correct them. I don't think it's irredeemable.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I know that my approach is probably not getting a whole lot of devotees following it, but I think just being chill and not getting upset, not having an exposed nerve about people seeing you as somebody who's a member of the sex that you are, of people seeing you that way. I think not getting upset about it is one of the ways to get us out of this mode where there's so many trans people who act like assholes.
Sure.
Like, relax, people. It's... You get a one ticket on this planet. Don't be in a state of agitation all the time. Like, relax.
Do you think that applies to TERFs too?
Oh yeah, I've got plenty of critics on both sides. Yeah,
as do I.
And you can go through our archive, and there's been a few episodes that we've devoted to the the toxicity and on the gender critical side. Not that it's wholly toxic, but there are elements that can make it toxic.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I get a lot of flack for defending people's freedom to be weird. So I get a lot of flack for, it's like, yeah, I mean,
yeah, you were accused of destroying lesbianism this week.
And it's like, yes, I do, you know, I can identify people's sex much of the time. I don't think that's dehumanizing them, but regardless, men can wear dresses.
This is so dishonest. Come on, this is not the issue at hand here. Sex, of course. There's no one that disagrees on this. It's such a cope. This is code.
Okay. Anyway,
it's so sad.
I take a lot of flack.
Well, hang on. We got to wrap up. But I want to ask a final question, because this will take a couple of minutes. It's very simple. I'm going to ask Nina first, and then I'm going to ask Brianna. Nina, what sex am I? Brianna, what sex am I?
I truly don't know. It seems to me you've defined yourself as a male, and I'm going to respond to that.
Not my identity. Just
this is the true answer.
Yeah, yeah.
How you want to identify yourself is how I'm going to do that, and I will gender you the way that you want.
Okay. But no comment on my sex. That was your comment on my gender, but you don't want to make a comment about my sex.
Like, does Corinna have a sex apart from identity?
Yeah, you're a biological male, obviously.
Yeah, well, that's what Nina said.
But the difference is, if you wanted to be called she, I would do that. I think I've done that today.
I'm sort of indifferent.
Okay. But most trans women are not indifferent. Like, you realize that, right?
I know. I'd love them to be more indifferent about it, because it really sucks to be offended and keyed up and have that internal.
Have you not read the psychology on this?
Do you have any idea at all what it feels like when somebody misgenders you?
I think I probably have a guess.
All right. It's a terrible feeling. It's very wounding, but you know what? I don't feel that way anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that other people who have had experiences like mine can learn to acclimate and just not care about it. Like, genuinely not see it as disrespect, not see it as cruelty, not see it as an own or a hierarchy or anything like that. But just like, okay, whatever.
So one of the things that makes me able to get through my day is running.
Yeah.
I wake up every single day and I go for a 4 or 5 mile run. This is very helpful for me to be able to deal with the stresses of my day. I would never suggest, as a policy prescription, people be forced to go run or encourage people to go do that. I'm glad you found something that works for you psychologically. You have no right to insist other people do that or insist on a culture that is buying into an idea that I think a lot of trans women find very distressing.
I wouldn't have a right to set that as a policy, but I'm sure we both agree I have a right to advocate for people.
Of course.
Yeah, that's all I do. That's all I do. Hey, we have been jawing for two and a half hours. Nina's is offending God by not going to her Passover Seder. And now won't go to heaven. Wait, you weren't going to go to heaven.
I hope I get there in time so that everyone can enjoy the flourless chocolate cake.
You know what's going to be really funny when this goes live is trans Twitter is going to pick the parts of it where I'm criticizing them, and I'm going to get it from trans Twitter. And then the TERFs are going to listen to me really holding you to account on your views, and they're going to get that from me on that. So I will get fucked both ways for doing this. It's going to be great. Well,
we all get it.
We'll get that too. But we don't live our lives to appease others.
Yeah, but I also don't whine about being canceled.
Okay.
All right.
And I don't feel like that defines my career. Yeah, I don't let it stop me.
Okay.
Well, Brianna, for some of our listeners who might be new to your history or your work, where would you have them go to check out what you do? Or are you working on anything cool?
I'm working on many things cool. The thing this cycle is it's all in back channel, so I can't talk about it. But if you want to see what I'm doing, you can go to Brianna Wu on Twitter and follow me there. If you like the Israel-Palestine debate, got some good stuff.
I hope that you are able to bring a lot of Democrats to in office to have conversations around difficult issues with people that they don't see eye to eye with, because that's 100% what we're missing right now on both sides of the aisles. But since that's the side that you work on, I want you to have all of the success that you can in those endeavors.
I appreciate that.
Agreed. Thanks for doing what you do, Brianna, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thanks, TERFs and Trannies.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.